Okay, so I'm going to talk about EVE2 collaboration culture from the point of view of EVE2. What does collaboration mean? It just means simply working together. So I'm going to try and kind of celebrate the various successes that we've had in working together and try and encourage even more collaboration. Because I think collaboration is one of the most kind of important and precious things that we have in this ecosystem. The ecosystem is designed for collaboration. It puts collaboration as a first-class citizen, and I think we should embrace that more. So I'm going to talk first about internal collaboration, and by that I mean collaboration which is internal to the Ethereum ecosystem, and I guess that shouldn't be too surprising that there is collaboration there, because we've been collaborating on Ethereum since the very beginning. So this is just an extension of our culture. The second part might be a bit more surprising, and this is about collaboration between blockchains. So we've seen this recent explosion of new ideas, of very high quality teams, and how can we make the most of that in win-win collaborations? Okay, first part, collaboration within Ethereum for Ethereum 2.0. So I guess Ethereum actually started at the very early days. Vitalik already in January 2014 and in the rest of 2014 was already thinking about scalability and proof of stake, even before DEF CON 0, even before Ethereum was launched. And I guess this culture of being open and transparent kind of is part of what we do at the Ethereum Foundation. And we've had contributions from other early founders in for EVE2. We've had Gavin come in, we've had Vlad, and this eventually led to the Morph paper, which was the first attempt to write some sort of spec for Serenity for EVE2. 2016 and maybe early 2017 was a bit of a down year in terms of EVE2 research, but in mid-2017 we had ETH research come in, and in addition to transparency and OpenSea being open, we had interactivity. So we had the possibility for researchers to comment on our research, but also to submit their own ideas. And this kind of led to ETH research, which is a forum online, to become a very active place within the blockchain space. And in 2018, a lot of the core ideas of EVE2 were either born or solidified during that time on ETH research. And as a continuation of research, we have speccing and implementation. And here as well, we've tried to be as open from day one, partly to enable early teams to come in. And this may have been a little bit chaotic for the early implementers, because we keep changing platform every other month, and we changed the spec quite a lot. But I think it all turned out pretty well, because this is a recent picture of the interrupt lock-in, and we have 9 different implementer teams from all over the world coming in. So the costs of being open, in terms of confusion and chaos, are definitely outweighed by the advantages. Another thing that we've done to try and encourage collaboration in EVE2 is at the legal level. So there's all sorts of tools, legal tools, that the creators of a blockchain project can use to maintain some sort of ownership over what they've created. And as part of the philosophy of minimization and simplicity and making Ethereum a real common good, the Ethereum Foundation has restrained from using those tools and tried to take an extreme decoupling approach. So for licensing, for example, all the work that we do is open by default. The patents, we have no patents. And if we did have patents, it would be exclusively for defensive reasons. NDAs, only for for data protection within the foundation, not to disclose things like salaries. And trademarks, we only have them for defensive purposes, and we've never enforced them. And I kind of want to contrast that with stories inspired from the blockchain space. So there's four blockchain projects in my mind that have taken, you know, the extreme opposite strategy for these things. So for example, there's a chain that has licensing which is exclusive to that chain. So if you want to use that technology and that code, you can't. It has to be for this one chain. There's another project which has 30 patents in their white paper. There's yet another project that every employee is NDA'd, and if you ask them, what have you been working on for the last 2-3 years, they say, I'm sorry, I can't, you know, I can't tell you. And then there's another blockchain project where the trademark for the blockchain is owned by a private entity as opposed to the public foundation. And you know, this opposite strategy, even though it might give you control, ultimately I think it's shooting yourself in the foot. Because you know, if you were to enforce these tools, they would be enforced centrally, and it kind of goes against the grain of our culture. So here for the Ethereum Foundation, we're just less likely to use legal tools. We've never sued anyone, and I think we're quite unlikely to sue people. And so just to summarize this legal strategy, we make the code, the ideas, the people, the brand, it's everyone's, it's a common good. It's not our code. And I guess this strategy has worked out pretty well for trademarks. So the Ethereum Foundation has actually been unable to get trademarks recently in Singapore and Korea. They were like, the patent office was like, hey, no, Ethereum is a common good. It's a blockchain, it's a cryptocurrency. You can't trademark it. And this is brilliant. We've reached a point where we can't even trademark the brand that we've created. One of the things that we're, you know, I guess also good at is trying to parallelize, to try and have different teams work on different places at the same time. So we have prototyping teams that work on phase zero, phase one, and phase two all in parallel. We have Quilt, Wasm, Trinity. And we also have all sorts of different teams working in parallel for quality assurance. So we have two teams working on formal verification on different parts of the ETH2 spec. We have security audits, cryptographic audits, we have fuzzing, we have bug bounties, and actually here's a list of five currently active bug bounties that you're welcome to try and tackle. And the first one, which is the bounties for the phase zero consensus, today we're doubling them. So all of these bounties should be available on challenges.ethereum. Aha, this is the slide. Okay. Why did no one tell me? Okay, so these bounties should all be kind of combined on a single web page, challenges.ethereum.org. And bounties is also you know, a great way to extend the collaboration from a short-term stint to a more long-term collaboration. So here's an example where you know, I submitted a 10 ETH bounty on Twitter to write the phase zero spec in 1,000 lines of Go code. A few days later, this bounty was claimed, and then a few days later, the guy, Proto, who actually claimed the bounty was hired full-time. And you know, also in the context of you know, delegating, but also minimizing the role of the foundation is grants. So we've given over $40 million in grants. We have a dedicated grants team of 8 people, and in addition to a quarterly grant program, we have special grants. You know, sometimes going up to $5 million grants. And again, just to give you like an example of how willing we are to collaborate, I gave a talk recently in Tel Aviv on ETH3 quantum security. There was a quantum post-quantum signature expert in the room. He came to me, he said, I'm interested in working on this problem that you just presented. A few days later, we had a call, and then a few days later after that, we had a grant. So if there's a good match, we can really move forward fast on collaboration. Okay, so this was internal collaboration, I guess not too surprising, still extremely dynamic. You know, I don't think there's many blockchain projects out there that have managed to, for example, have 9 different implementer teams for the one protocol. But I guess one thing that I'm very excited about is cross-chain collaboration. And one thing to note is that cross-chain collaboration is happening de facto. So these are ideas that we have essentially borrowed, inspired ourselves from other blockchain projects that are shipping in phase zero. So we have BLS, VRFs using signatures, VDFs, tree hashing. These are all things that other blockchain projects have had thought of before us, and we were able to reuse their work. And there's also all sorts of new ideas that are more recent, that are being experimented with, that we are very excited about. Key evolving signatures, snark-based light clients, even the Move VM from Libra. All of these things we're keeping a keen eye on and will gladly incorporate if these experiments turn out well. One piece of great news is that a lot of these blockchain projects have foundations. So for example, Cosmos has the Interchain Foundation, Polkadot, Web3 Foundation, Filecoin, Protocol Labs, et cetera, et cetera. And these foundations, as you can tell from their names, they have a vision, a mission, which extends way beyond their own blockchain. So for example, Interchain, evokes an idea of many blockchains talking to each other. Web3, evokes the idea that you have more components than just a blockchain, you have a whole ecosystem. Same for protocol, et cetera. And these foundations have a lot in common. We share a desire for interoperability, for standardization, for common goods. And another kind of point that we have in common is we have money that we'd like to invest in the broader ecosystem. So just to drill into one of these foundations where I think there's very good alignment is Protocol Labs. So Protocol Labs, at the legal layer, they have this really nice open pledge where they say that the code that they're shipping is dual license under 2 extremely permissive licenses. And any patents that they have this patent non-aggression pledge. They're also trying very hard to build modular components that can be reused. And the more modularity that you have, I think the better in terms of reuse. And there's one specific module that the ETH2 is looking to reuse, and that's libP2P. And it's not just something that we're looking to use, it's also something, for example, that Cosmos is looking to use, Polkadot is looking to use, et cetera, et cetera. So it's becoming a standard, which is fantastic. And they're also very generous in terms of funding common goods, and they're very proactive in terms of finding places where not only can they benefit themselves, but they can benefit the whole ecosystem. So in terms of standards, which is one of the goals if we want to try and be really good at working together, I think we're starting to see the emergence of a blockchain standard, kind of a stack. So it starts with SHA-256 at the bottom layer. The vast majority of existing and future blockchain projects are built on SHA-256. And that prevents a lot of headaches if we all use the same thing. libP2P, I think, has a really good shot at becoming the standardized networking peer-to-peer layer for the various blockchain projects. We have BLS, and maybe even more specifically, BLS 12381 as part of that stack, WASM. And I think at one of the final layers, we're going to have universal snarks. So this is a very recent development, but it's very exciting. It's the idea that you can have a snark proving system which works for everyone, which is circuit agnostic, and in particular in the trusted setup. Like Zcash, for example, they pioneered the use of snarks within a blockchain setup, but they had this significant friction of having to do a trusted setup for their specific application. But now we have new technologies to try and avoid this barrier to entry, and that's very exciting. And one of the amazing things is that these pieces of technology are the people who've actually built them are either directly from the blockchain space or have been subsumed and incorporated into the blockchain space. So for example, Planck, the authors are from Filecoin and Aztec. Marlin, one of the authors, is from Ethereum. Wasm, the founder of Ethereum, has gone to Definity. BLS 12381, literally Zcash came up with this curve, Sean Bowie. And then the L, Ben Lin is at Definity. And same with LibP2P. I guess the only exception is SHA-256. That came from the NSA, but at least their logo kind of looks like that of a coin. You know, interoperability as well is a great way to collaborate. So we have these two projects, Cosmos and Polkadot. You know, that's part of the whole vision to be interoperable with other blockchains. And so, you know, they've made an effort to take modules that are reusable and share them to the community. So we have IBC from Cosmos, we have Substrate, and another interesting trend that we're seeing is snark-based light clients. Because interoperability between chains is a lot about light clients, and we want them to be as cheap as possible. And we have Coda that's working with the fully recursive snarks, MNT4, MNT6, and then we have Cello, which is working with one level of recursion with the Zexi curves. All super interesting stuff. And one of the successes, I think, of blockchain collaboration has been with the academics. So we have this one group at Stanford, which is basically four people looking into blockchain-specific stuff, and they've pushed forward, you know, a very significant chunk of the crypto which is used today by blockchains. And this is the stuff that they have influenced us within Ethereum. But there's all sorts of other pieces of crypto that is being used within the wider blockchain space. And I guess a large part of this this influence probably came from the fact that there was a $30 million of funding to the Stanford Center for Blockchain Research, which happened in 2018. And here, you know, we've seen collaboration at the funding level. There's four different blockchain projects and others that have funded this, and it's been a huge, huge success. And the Stanford Center for Blockchain Research, in addition to doing all this research, they're doing all sorts of other programs that are providing value to the ecosystem. So I mentioned these universal snarks, and so the snark ceremonies is one thing that I think we can collaborate because it's a shared piece of technology. And here, actually, in the participation, diversity is key. So we want to try and reduce trust in the system, and the more diverse the participants, the better. So that's another area for collaboration. And another kind of interesting trend is hardware. How can we use hardware to our benefit? And the competition model, which worked really well for proof of work, is also, I believe, going to work extremely well for VDF and Snark ASICs. I think at this point, we all want to see Snark ASICs as one of the pieces of hardware coming up. So on that topic, in terms of hardware competitions, we just finished the VDF competition, which was the first round, which led to a 75% speed up in performance. Congratulations, Eric Pearson, for that. And we're going to start the second round of the competition in just a few days. And, you know, the VDF Alliance Here it's an example of collaboration where we could not have done it alone. It's not just that we would be wasting resources if we tried the same thing at the same time. It's here the project is so expensive that we need collaboration. And here I'm excited to announce that Tezos is the fourth funding partner to the alliance, Cosmos, Ethereum, Filecoin, Tezos. I think that's a great team of founders. And you know, collaboration extends beyond the blockchain space. We have collaboration at the tooling level with AWS, Synopsys, Xilinx, and also with academics, because there's some hard problems to be solved here. And you know, the space of future collaborations is just massive. And that's only a partial list. So really excited to be working with other blockchain projects. This is a unique opportunity. And I think we can only get to where we want to be you know, through collaboration. The vision is so ambitious that we have to collaborate. It's not even a choice. Thank you.